Good morning, everyone. My name is Stephanie Maitha Mayer. I'm a senior studio art major here at Carleton. Before I invite Kip Fulbeck, today's Asian Pacific American Convocation speaker, sponsored by the Office of Intercultural Life, up to the podium, I would like to give a brief introduction. Again, my name is Stephanie Maitha Mayer. My parents were creative in combining two to make me. My dad's name is Stephen, and my mother's name is Panery, making up Stephanie. My middle name comes from my mother's native language of Cambodia, a Khmer word, Metta Sokrona, which means mercy and compassion. Perhaps they saw God's mercy in the safety and gift of my birth. They chose to just call me Metta. My last name is Mayer, which I've been told is rooted in German, but I know that I am mostly of Norwegian descent. My name alone gives glimpse to the intricacy of me as one of two races, many ethnicities. Why is it important to recognize and embrace multiracial identity? It is the fusion, the clash between different languages, types of food, ways of living, and values. It's about taking dynamically different ways of life and putting it all in one person and forcing them to deal with it. It is our nature as human beings to categorize our understanding of the world into boxes, but for multiracial people, it's a lot harder to fit into one category. It was only since the 2000 census was a race option multiracial available. Multiracial people have to compromise, choose a side, and as Kip Fulbeck puts it in a recent interview, choose between representing their mom or their dad. I came across his book, Part Asian, 100% Hapa, my sophomore year. Seeing his work, photographs of ethnically mixed Asians, along with their stories, fully resonated with my own experience as a multiracial person. Kip Fulbeck is an award-winning artist, slam poet, and filmmaker. He speaks nationwide on identity, multiraciality, and pulp culture, mixing together spoken word, stand-up comedy, political activism, and personal stories. A challenging and inspirational teacher, Kip Fulbeck is a professor of art at the University of California, Santa Barbara, where he has been named an outstanding faculty member 4 times. Kip Fulbeck identifies himself as Chinese, English, Irish, and Welsh. His talk today is titled, What Are You? The Changing Face of America. Please join me in welcoming Kip Fulbeck to Carleton College.
Hey, how's it going? Good, okay. I hope you don't mind me asking, but job application.
Answer all questions completely and to the best of your ability. Name?
Kip Fulbeck.
Age?
44.
Birthday?
April 30th.
Hometown?
Covina, California.
Education?
UCLA, Dartmouth, UC San Diego.
Marital status?
Single.
Children?
None, I hope.
Previous occupations?
Beach lifeguard, hamburger.
Height?
6'1".
Weight?
About 180.
Hair color?
Black.
Eye color?
Brown.
Favorite color?
Pardon me?
Favorite color?
Blue.
Shoe size?
11.
Zodiac sign?
Taurus.
Favorite NBA team?
Lakers.
Favorite Beatles song?
Hey Jude.
Favorite sport?
When I was a kid, I was really into
pizza or spaghetti.
Pardon me?
Pizza or spaghetti.
What?
Pizza or spaghetti.
Spaghetti?
Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Apples or oranges?
Oranges.
Steamed rice or fried rice?
Steamed.
Chicken or fish?
Fish.
Electric or acoustic?
Electric.
Two or four-wheel drive?
Two.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
City or country?
City. Shit.
Stripes or solids?
Solids.
Meat or veggies?
Veggies.
MTV or VH1?
VH1.
Cotton or polyester?
Cotton.
Day or night?
Day.
Celine Dion or Mariah Carey?
Pass.
Checkers or chess?
Chess.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Vanilla Ice or M&M?
I thought they were the same guy.
Ashley Simpson or Jessica Simpson?
Jessica Simpson.
Miley Cyrus or Billy Ray Cyrus?
Billy Ray.
Dick Cheney or Satan?
Satan.
Hiking shoes or go-go boots?
Go-go boots.
Candles or flashlights?
Candles.
Sweet or spicy?
Spicy.
Ski or snowboard?
Snowboard.
Ethnicity, check one.
Okay. White, Asian, Pacific Islander.
Please check only one box. Answer all questions completely and to the best of your ability. Ethnicity.
White, Asian, Pacific.
Please check only one box.
Okay, I'll make a big check mark across the two.
Do not mark outside the designated areas. Ethnicity.
Multiracial.
Do not invent your own box. Ethnicity.
Other.
If checking other, please explain below. Use additional page if necessary.
Good morning.
I'll try it again. Thanks.
Hey, you guys. I need to start off seeing where y'all is. So we're going to start with a pop quiz, which is going to be fun. And the part of the pop quiz, the trick about a pop quiz is you have to yell out the answer like you're not afraid to be wrong, okay? You got to yell out the answer. Are you ready? So you got to be like, even if you're wrong, you just got to be brave, yell it out. We'll start with an easy one. Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Which celebrity lost custody of your children?
Yes.
Now see, most of you knew that, but you're like, oh, it's going to wait. You knew. You have to yell it out. We'll try another one. Another easy one. Here we go. You ready?
Yes.
Which American won 8 gold medals at the Beijing Olympics? Thank you. It's not that hard, see? 50 Cent boasted he would retire if his new CD not opened higher sales than that of which artist? Yes. Did they open higher? No, actually, they didn't. Did he retire? No. Which teenager just published her autobiography? I didn't hear a single gentleman answer that. You need to have some of the gentlemen answer. Which teen heartthrobs wear purity rings? See, I like that. I like when a guy's like, Jonas Brothers. Yeah, I know. Who sings the song Halo? Very good. Which NBA team finished with the best regular season record? Okay, very good. Who got fired from a job at Bolthouse Productions for drinking on the job? I heard it back there. Who stole Nicole's Red Bull on America's Next Top Model? Come on, you know it. John, Paul, George, and? Very good. Carrie, Miranda, Charlotte, and? Very good. Gentlemen, come on. They're like, what is this, Carrie, Miranda? What is this? Who famously served only 82 minutes in jail for a DUI conviction? I said 82 minutes. Lindsay Lohan was 84 minutes. Okay. Ebony magazine created controversy by putting what appears to be a middle-aged white woman on the cover. Who is this middle-aged white woman? Before giving birth to 8 babies, how many kids did Octomom already have? Thank you. When caught lip-syncing on Saturday Night Live, who panicked, did a hoedown, and ran off stage? And finally, who jumped up and down on Oprah's couch? Very good. You get an A for that. Let's try part two. Name our current Supreme Court justices. Okay, we'll start with an easier one. We'll start with an easier one. Here we go. Hundreds of thousands have been murdered, raped, and left homeless in Darfur. What country is Darfur in? Thank you. I spoke at a college, which I shall not name, just about a month ago. What country is it in? Africa! No, but what country? Africa! I'm sure of it! Navy SEALs rescued Captain Richard Phillips from pirates off the coast of which country? Very good. What percentage of plastic water bottles are recycled? 1 in 3, 1 in 4, 1 in 6? Very good. According to USA Today, what percentage of American children are overweight? 14, 34, 54? Ah! You can't just pick the big number every time. So you guys thought you had the system. In 2007, President Bush vetoed the Children's Health Care Bill because he wanted to limit the cost to $6 billion per year, while Congress believed $7 billion was needed. How much do we spend per month in Iraq? $250 million, $6 billion, or $12 billion? In other words, about $180,000 a minute. By the way, which country is Iraq? Thank you. I like that. There's no wait there. B. In response to global pressure to increase freedom of speech, the Chinese government created official protest zones for authorized demonstrators during the Olympics. Of these 77 applications for protest permits, how many did the Chinese government eventually approve? Very good. Value your freedom of speech in this country. Speaking of which, 25-year-old Army Sergeant Kenneth Gibson and 22-year Marine Sergeant Michael First were killed in Iraq on August 10th, 2008. Here's the hint. It has to do with the date. On that same day, what was our president doing? It was the Olympics. And these are the people who died for fighting for our country that day, the two soldiers. Prop 8 passed in California with 52% of the vote, putting over 18,000 same-sex marriages in jeopardy. How much money did followers of the Mormon Church donate to help pass this measure?
Too much.
We'll count that. We'll count that as correct, yes. When confronted about his extramarital affair on Nightline, presidential hopeful John Edwards responded by A, twice asking, can I explain what happened? B, pointing out that when he was having the affair, his wife's cancer was actually in remission. C, reminding viewers that John McCain also cheated on his first wife. D, all of the above. Yes, you can't make this stuff up. True or false, eating 1 kilogram of beef causes more greenhouse gas emissions than driving your car 3 hours. True or false, humans are the only mammal which grieve or bury their dead and grieve for the loss of loved ones. The U.S. National Academy of Sciences, along with 10 other most respected national science academies worldwide, have stated unequivocally that global warming is occurring and is directly caused by human action. In a CNN poll, what percentage of the American public agrees? 56% of our country agrees with that. According to Fox News, McCain's staff members have revealed that former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, A, could not name the countries in NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, B, once greeted McCain's staff wearing only a towel, C, did not know Africa was a continent, D, all of the above. It's too easy. Not to be outdone, Todd Palin recently completed the 6th annual Iron Dog race, where he drove his 2-stroke snowmobile nearly 2,000 miles. In order for you to produce the equivalent amount of hydrocarbon pollution, how many times would you have to drive a Chevy Malibu completely around the world? When told that 2/3 of America's population that Iraq War was not worth fighting, what was Vice President Dick Cheney's response? Good. And finally, after publicly stating he had severed all ties to Halliburton, how much did Vice President Dick Cheney's Halliburton stock options rise in value in the first year of the Iraq War? Or second year. Here's 100, 500, 1,000. It's actually a trick question. Okay. I say this to you because it's very hard to find out real information in this country. It's hard not to know that Octomom had 6 kids before this. It's hard not to know who Sarah Boyle is. It's like stuff that goes through pop culture inundates us, and the stuff that actually matters to us is really, really hard to find out. And when I talk to schools, especially like when I talk to junior highs and high schools, I'm like, I would much rather you guys disagree with me if you can back up your points with your own research. Don't listen to me because I'm on stage or because I'm a teacher or to your parents or your clergy or your, because you got to find out for yourself. I mean, it's really, really important. I say this because I talk around the country all the time, and when I tell people that when I was born, that it was illegal for my parents to be married in many states, a lot of the younger kids, like especially junior high, they're like, no. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, no, it wasn't. Like, it was illegal for my, no. And they don't believe me. And I'm like, how old are you? He's like, 11 and a half. I'm like, okay. I go, a lot of stuff changed from when I was a kid to when you're a kid. Like, it was illegal. No, it wasn't. And I'm like, yeah, okay. When I was a kid, we didn't have the internet, right? Yeah. So we didn't have things like MapQuest and stuff. He's like, well, how'd you get anywhere? And I'm like, maps, you know? We didn't have ATMs. Kid's like, well, did you have money? Yes, we had money. It's not like barter system, you know? I will give you 7 cows for that land. It wasn't like, yes, we had money. But I go, when I was a kid, this is blown away, we had smoking on airplanes. And that's when the kid's like, okay, now I know you're lying. So on an airplane. I'm like, yeah, smoke it on an airplane. Yeah. And then the kid goes, was it open? And see, I didn't know what he meant. I'm like, what? He goes, was the airplane open? I'm like, he thinks I'm like the Wright brothers, right? Like, you know, I'm like, no. It was a jet. And the kid's like, did you have glass? Like, what? Did you have glass between the rows? No, it was just, well, how'd it work? It's like row 20 would be non-smoking and row 21 would be smoking. And the kid's like, but the smoke would just come over. I know! It was stupid. We do stupid things. I go, but, you know, we used to, like, have slavery. Not a good idea, right? We used to, like, not allow women to vote. Not a good idea, right? Okay, but you're, like, 11 and a half. You're 11 and a half. You're young enough, you'll be able to tell your kids you lived in a time where gay people couldn't get married. And your kids will be like, no way.
That's stupid. That will change in your lifetime. Do you get it? As we progress as a society, these things change. The kid kind of got it. So what I want to talk about is this project I worked on where I photographed people around the country who fell in this category of other. Because we live in a time where, you know, the U.S. Census for the first time in the year 2000 allowed people to check more than one box. It was 9 years ago. That was the first time. Before that, my own country, it wasn't just like job forms and health questionnaires and school forms where I got to check one box. My own country, in which I was born, was like, pick one, which really to me says, pick mom or dad, but just pick one. 9 years ago, they allowed that for the first time. So I thought, how many other people are dealing with this? So I went through, and this is my version of HOP, and I say that because like language is something which is not owned by anybody. I can take a siesta, right? I can eat soup du jour. I can Google something. That wasn't a word 10 years ago. I'm going to Google this. What's wrong with you? It wasn't a word. You know, like when I was a kid, the word party was a noun. See? So you guys messed that up, you know. We went verb to an object party. You guys like, we party! Okay. Anyway, I photograph people all the same way. They're all photographed from the collarbone up with no expression, no glasses, makeup, jewelry, clothing, etc. And I had them self-designate their ethnicity in their own words. So he's putting Japanese, French, Chinese, Irish, Swedish, too. Because even though the U.S. Census allowed people to check more than one box 9 years ago, it was still their boxes. In other words, it was still their categories. And if you remember anything about this talk, you know, it's like the idea that that race exists biologically doesn't make sense. Everyone in this room here is African. That's it. There's no biological determinant to race. Does it exist in our day-to-day lives? Of course it does. When you see others as different, it allows you to do things like enslave them or give them blankets full of smallpox, or it's just whatever it is. If you see them as different, it allows you to treat them different. So I had them then respond to the question, what are you, in their own handwriting. I'm exactly the same as every other person in 2,500. And what's nice is that people came up with their own questions, and my cardinal rule for this project was never to interfere with what they wrote. So someone writes down, I'm everything and nothing at the same time. I feel I am at the end of a disappearing race, Hawaiian. It's just their words without any kind of editing from me. It was hard to find older people to photograph. Can anyone guess why? It's not because they're naked. There's always somebody because they're naked. They're not naked. For the record, it's just like scraps pulled down like this. It's not like, Auntie, come on! It's not like it. It's not like that. Why was it hard to find older people to photograph? Yeah, there's less it wasn't just culturally found, it was illegal. And so, but without even reading this, just look at the handwriting. You know that's grandma handwriting, right? You know that's thank you so much for the fruitcake. It's like, we know so much by the way we mark our objects. We know so much that's female, about what age it is, etc. Compare that to like a kid, because kids don't default to race. When you get what are you? That's what we do in this country. So what are you? We know, okay, they mean race. Just like when people say, hey, so what do you do? We know they're asking what? Yeah, your job. Like, in all the world, what do you do? I'm a banker. I work for the Bank of America. I shall work there until I die. It's like, that's all you do, okay? There's other things that we do. But look at a kid here. I'm mixed. I like playing with my friends. When I get older, I want to be a star. I really like sports. That's good, but she uses extra stuff for the sun. The heart. This. But the cool part about this is actually right here. The cool part is the big black blob, and I say that for a reason. If you or I were doing that as adults, we would have been like, oh man, I messed up. I put a big black blob. Can I get another piece of paper? But a kid is just like, almost done. Because they haven't learned there's a right or wrong way to talk about yourself. They haven't learned there's a right or wrong way to make marks or right or wrong way to make art, and that's kind of refreshing. This woman says she's African-American and Filipina. I'm that black girl that doesn't speak Ebonics, can't dribble more than 2 feet across the court, doesn't know what exactly a weave is. The girl looks half something around the eyes. Yeah. This one, Vietnamese-Polish, talks about how she fits in everywhere she goes. I am Mexican when I'm in Mexico, Hawaiian when I'm in Hawaii, Alaska Native when I'm in Alaska, Seminole when I'm in Florida, etc. Here's an 11-year-old boy, Chinese-Danish. I am part Chinese and part Danish. I don't usually tell people I'm Danish, though, because they think I'm a pastry. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. For this kid here, Indian European. My mom cooks really good Indian food. My dad, who is European, claims to be able to cook all kinds of food, although it tastes more like leather. I hope I'm not what I eat. It's good.
As the project got bigger and I had photographed at this point over 1,000 people, I decided I was going to make a book out of it. But I could only put about 100 or 120 in the book, and people were like, "Well, I want to get in the book. How do I get in? Or I should want to be in the book. How do I get in the book?" And I told them, "You get in the book by writing something which is non-transferable." Meaning, you write something that's so you, no one else could read it. It's so you that you give it to someone else and they read it, still sounds like you. What do you mean? I mean, if you write down, "I am a human being," I've got 50 of those. You write down, "I make trash cans for a living." When you think trash, think of Mike. You're in! Sometimes they respond to the question itself. "I left the U.S. hoping to find out what I am. Found out I'm an American. Why? Are you coming on to me?" This is a guy I know via tattooing. He identifies as Filipino, and he actually has tattooed on his neck 100% Filipino. So why would someone who is so invested in his Filipino identity that he tattoos 100% of Filipino on his neck, why would he want to be part of a project that's about being quote-unquote multiracial? Well, identity is not something that anyone gets to tell you. No one gets to tell you who you are. Only you get to decide who you are. And people all day love to tell you who you are. "Oh, you go to Carleton, therefore you blah, 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 blah." Like people like, yesterday they're like, "Oh, you're from California." You know, it's like, you know, "You guys are so liberal. We passed Prop 8. We got the Terminator for a governor." You know, it's like these labels we put on each other don't really make sense. So my thing for the project was, if you want to be part of the project, be part of the project. But check out what this guy writes. "Hi, my name is James. I am 100% Filipino. I have Spanish in me." Pardon? "I am 100% Filipino. I have Spanish in me." That doesn't make any sense to me. And yet it makes total sense. If you're Filipino, undoubtedly, you have Spanish in you, you probably have Chinese, you have Indigenous Islander. It shows how this whole idea of how we've classified races and ethnic groups is really, really gray and doesn't really have set boundaries. Some kids are simple. "What am I?" That's easy. "Boy, Elijah, purple belt, done." I got amazing kids that write things like this. I'm a person, and you know, I can't do better than that. A star, triangle head. This is out in Hawaii. This is if anyone's ever followed sumo, the national sport of Japan, the grand champion for many years was a fighter named Akebono, who was 6'8", 420 pounds, deadly fighter. This is his mom. Put them in a fight, put the money on auntie. "What am I? I am goddess. I am woman. Confident, arrogant." This guy's Cuban, Korean, and Chinese. "I am a crossbred, cross-dressing rock god guitarist. I was in a band with my brother and cousins. After the show, some people came up to me and asked if we were Japanese. My reply was, 'No, chicos, somos cubanos.'" Guy says he's Chinese wasp. "What am I? Queer Eurasian. Done." There's a guy, Hawaiian, Chinese, and German. "I'm a grown man who's just exposed my breast to a complete stranger." Now that's a good joke, but I want to point out something to you. What's up with this? You don't have to draw emoticon sideways, right? Just putting that out there. This is his buddy who followed him. "If I had a few beers before I came here, I'd know what to write. I thought it was a nude shooting session. I actually came here to see my friend Keith expose his breast to a complete stranger. They're bigger than my wife's." A couple kids I teach in the summer. I teach a junior lifeguard program. "My name is Aliko. It is made up Japanese. No one has said my name right when they first meet me, but I think I have cool nicknames like Ali, Alberto VO5, and Fat Albert." Her sister Ashley. "Every single day people ask me what I am. When I'm walking down the street, when I'm in a store, wherever I am. I tell them I'm Japanese, Mexican, and German. They say, 'Oh, I've never asked anyone what they were. I've never seen anyone who looks like me, except my twin sister.'" Think about that. Every single day. She writes up, every single day of her life, people ask her, and she writes down, "I've never asked anyone what they were." Here's a kid, 14, doesn't look too happy, does he? Doesn't look too stoked to be there. "This morning I thought I was going to the movies, and my mom made me come here." Not too happy to be there. This guy puts Japanese American. As you read Ichiban's statement, "The most important part of this project for me was not that I found my tribe, okay? It wasn't like we had anything in common besides we all couldn't fill out these forms correctly. The most important part of this project for me was it forced me to be around people who thought differently than me. Meaning, I am as cowardly as anyone in this room. I like hanging around people who think like me. All my friends, you know, there's no homophobes there. There's no one that voted for Bush. It's just like it's our crew, you know? And I like to think and I feel comfortable. And then the problem with that is it doesn't let me see the world as it really is. It makes me feel this little bubble where I'm like, well, how come that's like... And so I think Ichiban and I probably agree in this last statement. We both feel we're patriots. We both believe this is the greatest country in the world. I think we come to it from completely opposite directions. So it was really important to me to like meet people that have different opinions. I remember when President Obama was going through his victory speech, and he had this line. He said, I will listen to you, and I promise to listen to you, especially when we disagree. And I thought that was so important. That's stuff that we don't do right now. So that's what was valuable to me about this project. Here's a guy who's black, white, and native. Again, not my definition of Hapa, but if you want to be part of the project, come on in. This is out in New York. I had a Sam from the Bronx. My ancestral tribe, the Tainos, were extinguished by Columbus and company. If we'd have seen it coming, we'd have eaten them. Then we got the kids. And the kids got the radical statements, right? But what I challenge you guys to do is not write off kids either, because we do this. You know, diversity is not just race, which is how we talk about it. Diversity is so much more. It is like social economic status. It's education level. It's age. It's geographical place of birth, geographical place of living. It's religion, or the freedom not to have religion. It's physical abilities or disabilities, all these things. And we write off kids all the time. It's easy to say, well, kids all scribble. Well, look at this scribble, and look at my niece Kaya, who's like terrible twos here, and look at hers, which translates as, must kill Uncle Kip. Must wait till sleeping and attack with hammer, okay? Or look at this one here. You see this kid? We're like, oh, she's mad. Doesn't look mad. But it isn't until you actually ask her name, and it's like, it's Madeline. I'm like, oh. Here's the only person I ever actually tried to interfere with. I tried to get him to change his statement. I broke my cardinal rule, because he wrote down, I'm a very little boy in fifth grade that has no friends. And I was like, you got to write that you got a friend, because it just was like killing me. And he's like, but I don't have any friends. I'm like, well, just write that you have one, but I don't have any, just write, I don't have any friends! Thank God that kid did listen to me. Because he nailed it. This kid nailed the human condition. This project is shown all over the country, internationally. Everywhere it goes, it'll be a museum. I want 50 prints here. I want 30 prints here. Every single place it's gone, the curator has always said, make sure to include that kid with no friends. And the reason is that it isn't that we all want to be his friend. It's that we've all been this kid. You know, maybe you aren't the multiracial kid at your school, but at some point in your life, you have been, you are, or you will be the blank in the blank. You'll be the new person at the job. You'll be the person whose father is in prison. You'll be the one who has a lisp. You'll be the one who wears glasses. You'll be the one who's overweight. You'll be the one whose mother lost her job. Whatever it is, we've all been this. And I think that as adults, we don't feel it less. We just get better at hiding it. So I'm really glad this kid was able to stick to that and not listen to me. African American Japanese, what am I? Easy, 100% black, 100% Japanese. There's somebody here I finished the book with who says, I'm a person of color, not half white, not half Asian, a whole other, and checks the box. That's how that project worked out. I want to show you what happens when it went to a museum, because the Japanese American National Museum said they want me to have a show of it for 5 months. And I'm like, hell yeah, 5 months. And then I was like, what have I done? Because 5 months, my biggest fear is that the first month, crowded, and then 4 months, empty. So I had to find a way to get people to come back to the show. Okay, so here's how it's laid out. You see people walking through in the first gallery, looking at the images, looking at my drawings. Second gallery, I have this table. And I built a series of shelves here. There's columns. There's actually 8 columns of shelves based on the I Ching, the Book of Changes. And I thought, how cool would it be if anyone who came to the project, anybody, could take their Polaroid, stick it in a card, write their statement, and put it up on one of these shelves. And I made room for 500 people to do it, hoping that in 5 months they would fill up. Because I would say, well, then people want to come back. They're like, oh, let's go back and see if there's any more pictures. Or let's go back. I put my picture up. Let's go back. And I hope they would fill up in 5 months. What happened was they filled up the first night. Okay? We had 1,000 people come to the show, filled up, and the museum staff came to me and was like, what do you want to do now, Dr. Frankenstein? Because we didn't know. I mean, they were just random pictures of people that I didn't photograph. You know, like me, Spider-Man, Batman. Okay? People of all ages, people from all around the world. What happened was it started taking over the museum. Like, this isn't my gallery, okay? It started creeping out, like this kind of identity virus, as it got bigger and bigger. And it became these really interesting spaces that you could go and interact with. You could touch these. You could look at them like, you tell me. It wasn't Halloween. Some princess in crown came in. I mean, I don't know. Then kids started scribbling. And then people started doing this group thing, which I didn't plan because I wasn't shooting them. And then people started, like, writing to each other. Like, this is, konnichiwa, I like girl. and I love you. Because you could move them, okay? And then people started writing to each other, okay? They started pointing at each other in their pictures. This is all out of my control, and saying things like, you know, Sarah, marry me. But the cool part is that Sarah, marry me wasn't there at the beginning. He came back during that 5 months and wrote that, which was really cool. So eventually what happened was people started coming to the museum and they'd walk right by my photographs and go to these. Because they were more interesting, which was this weird sort of compliment insult simultaneously. And that's how that piece worked out. So that became this book called Part Asian, 100% Hapa, which is not a book about race. It is a book about identity. Just like its follow-up is not a book about tattoos. It is a book about identity. I want to know the stories behind why. And now granted, when you've got 40 million people with ink, it's easy to find people. But I didn't care if they were great tattoos. I don't care if they're little or big. I want to know why. What makes you tattoo your skull? I want to know. What does this mean? Tell me what this knife means here. You know, what, you know, that girl's face could be sitting next to you in class. You'd never imagine a full back piece. Some people are great friends. This guy was one of my groomsmen at my wedding. Some are celebrities. This is Slash from Guns N' Roses. But the thing is, I want to know the stories. Like, there's a shark here on his arm. Not an unusual tattoo, but why? After a close encounter with the 8-foot bull shark, we made a deal. Sharks don't eat me, and I won't eat them. So just for, let's see, I'm going to go through some of the, I've got to share this one. This says, Bitch Be Cool. Anyone know the movie? There we go, Pulp Fiction. So, but what makes you get that on your arm? Why would you put Bitch Be Cool on your arm? Check it out. My partner and I had just got into a fight. The morning after, we were sitting at a coffee shop looking at each other awkwardly when she said, let's go get Bitch Be Cool tattooed on our arms. So we did. It's a model for life. We're still together. It's kind of nice. And because I'm a faculty, I got to include some of the professors because they always have their own versions of why they get tattooed. And the professors are interesting. It's a truism that only real marine biologists have tattoos. In fact, that's how you tell the real ones from the wannabes. The wannabe marine biologists. The lower tat is a deep water anglerfish, large fish is the female, the little stubby thing is the male. It is a sexual parasite, every guy's dream. This woman approached me after a gig and showed me her tattoo, told me the story. I was like, fantastic. Photographed her the next day. I got a call that night. She's like, I can't be in the book. I go, I just photographed you. She's like, I can't. I told my parents, they're freaking out. Please erase the images. I go, but you were so, I want to be, it's just my family's freaking out. Please erase them. I go, listen, what you wrote was quite profound. It will affect thousands and thousands of people, especially young women in this country. Please reconsider. She goes, I so want you. It's just my family. I go, how about this? I'll crop your face out. I'll take your name out. She's like, okay. My tattoo means peace in French. I have struggled with severe anorexia, reaching a weight of 86 pounds at a height of 5'9". I decided, was forced to get help at a hospital for 2 long months and slowly was able to recover. I am now accepting of my flaws and at peace, mind, body, and spirit. It is written in French because French women are thin. I couldn't think of a more powerful and painful line than that last line. After all this treatment, that this thing still hangs with her. So I was very, very glad she let me keep her in the book. I also found that by being very honest about who I was able to meet people in social groups I would not think I would have access to. I don't suggest you walk up to an HA and let me take your picture. But for whatever reason, people, when I showed them what I was doing, they were like really cool with it. This guy's the president of San Jose Charter of the Hells Angels. I remember, like, you have to write a statement. I'm like, yeah, that's great. Thank you, sir. Thank you. I also photographed a lot of gangbangers or ex-gangbangers, and that's another phrase we use to write people off, right? It's like gangbangers. Oh, I get it. They're all 19. They all are brown and black. They all live in South Central. It's like, what happens when, you know, you've grown up and you're no longer in the gang? You've got a kid, but you've got a 213 on your back. That's not just the LA area code. 213 is MM. You don't leave Lamé. You leave Lamé, you are under death threat the rest of your life. He talks about having his kid, where his kid asks him about the tattoos and says, every question he asks is a historical lesson on the Chicano experience in LA and the world around us, a lesson on gangs and drugs, a lesson on politics and cultures, but most importantly, a lesson on life and living. Pretty articulate for what we would consider a gangbanger. I also photograph people of different statures. This woman has OI, or osteogenesis imperfecta, brittle bone disease, and she runs a website called Gimps Gone Wild. And she's got this fantastic line here. She says, life is about enjoying it, not taking it too seriously. Humor is the key. I design t-shirts with midget disability humor at gimpstore.com. If people don't like who I am, they can kiss my handicapped ass and stand me up to do it. Bonnie. I was like, that's great. And you got to have a couple mistakes, because that's part of tattooing too. It's like, what was I thinking? Why they put tattoo parlors next to bars, I have no idea. Again, I didn't want to be like all dumb tattoos, but this guy was one of my honor students at UCSB, a brilliant artist. He's graduated a couple years later. He calls me up last summer. He's like, yo, man, I got recognized. Like, what? So I got recognized. I'm like, what? He's in the gym, in the shower. And some guy's like, yo, man, you in a tattoo book? And that's when I knew I had made it as an artist. Right? All right, this is a pro skater. In high school, his friend's mother gave him a tattoo machine for Christmas. That's a good idea. So they practiced on each other, which gives you Black Sabbath, El Barto, and across the toes, I love bacon. You can't make this stuff up. Non-transferable. So some people you may recognize are in the book. This is Jeffrey Sebelia, Kat Von D, Chuck Liddell, Evan Seinfeld, Margaret Cho, Scott Ian. I love this tattoo. This is a you know multi-platinum heavy metal rock star. He writes about how seeing Kiss in 1977 changed his life and how it made him become a rock star, which is kind of cool. This is Joan Jett, pioneer female rocker. Tara Patrick, adult film star. This is Scott Weiland from Stone Temple Pilots and Velvet Revolver. And especially shooting the rock stars, my students are like, can I come? I want to be an assistant. I'm like, okay, I'll take two of you, but you must be cool. What? You have to be cool. Professional. No autographs. No pictures. And I try to set the example. You go in, you photograph them, thank you, sign this, thank you very much, shake your hand, done. Professional. And I'm always setting the example until we photograph Paul Stanley from Kiss, and I lose it. In seventh grade, I dressed up as you. I was you. You said professional. Shut up, it's Paul Stanley. I was you. We all kind of geek out sometimes. And I wanted to finish up this with showing you some people, these profiles and courage. I photographed a lot of vets. I think it's really important because my dad, you know, I grew up in a lot of naval bases. My dad fought in two. I photographed veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq I, Iraq II. And I want to hear their stories because we don't really hear them. It wasn't until just recently that even allowed photographs of the coffins coming back. It was, you know, considered illegal to do that. So I want to hear their stories. This guy just finished his third tour. The tattoo says, never forget. This tattoo is in honor of the Marines in my platoon who were killed in Huzbaya, Iraq. I told one of them I'd get a tattoo in his honor if he was killed. He died on April 17th, 2004. Never forget has two meanings. One, for me to never forget my fallen brothers. Two, for all those who see this tattoo, to never forget the cost of war. Courage is being a firefighter in the World Trade Center. And when they collapsed, his battalion died. He survived. It says, all gave some gave all. And it's the names of his brothers in his battalion. So it's Engine 3, Ladder 12, Battalion 7. Courage is being in stage 4 of breast cancer and choosing, rather than have reconstructive surgery, to have the breast cancer awareness ribbon tattooed around your body. Because there's a group called Tattoos for a Cure who will tattoo you for free if you choose to, or can it afford to have reconstructive surgery. But nothing gave my life as much a reality check as when I photographed the survivors of Auschwitz, which is a part of tattooing we don't like to talk about, right? Because we think about tattooing as like, oh, I love Miami, and can I want to get this here? It's like there's a very dark side about non-voluntary tattoos, and not just Nazi Germany, but also Japan and China, and some historians say Egypt, and it's got a long history. If you read her statement, woman of valor, Eva Braun, daughter, sister, wife, mother, grandmother, and friend, 1927-Holocaust survivor A17923, and my life has changed in a significant way, meaning when I was going over to her house, my day was like, okay, photograph Mrs. Braun, then I got to get my oil change and beat traffic on the freeway. That was my day. And I remember like seeing her, she's like, you want to see some pictures? I'm like, sure, I'll see some pictures. And she's like, that's my father and mother, they were killed. Those are my sisters, they were killed by the Nazis. And we sat for an hour, my wife and I, with her. And I remember we're leaving, and I go, Mrs. Braun, I got to be honest with you. I totally appreciate you letting me photograph you. But just so you know, this book is going to have Crips in it, and Hell's Angels, and heavy metal rock stars, and porn stars, and ex-cons, along with, you know, doctors, and lawyers, and professors, and CEOs. It's a whole cross-section of the world. Are you sure you're comfortable being in this book? Because I know a lot of survivors have had their tattoos removed via laser, and she looks at me, and she starts laughing. And she's like, you don't understand. She's like, it is my life's mission to show this tattoo. Put me in the book. And I was like, okay. That's how that book worked out. And just for your curiosity, this is my back piece done by Horitomo in Japan, 20 sessions. It's easier than taking my shirt off here and ending up on YouTube. So, and if you guys haven't had your cute fix for the day, let me show you what I'm working on next. This book comes out next year. It's a book on multiracial kids. 12 and under, any kid that's mixed, and I want to capture these kids as them. I want to photograph these kids as the people they are, with their attitude. Not the way their parents want them to be, the way they are. Because sometimes the kids come out and they're like, I'm like, the parents like, do another pose, Bernice. The kid's like, when I get the parents out of the way, then I capture the kids, the joy of learning to play the guitar, the joy of getting your braces off, the joy of being a spaz, you know, just trying to capture the, I mean, look at that kid. That guy's 3 years old. You talk about an old soul, that's like 103, right, that face? Just fantastic, just lovely, lovely kids. This comes out in spring. Maya Sotero Ng, the great educator and sister of Barack Obama, has written the foreword to the book. It's I'm really, really proud of it. So, like, I remember shooting this picture, and I showed the parent, you cool with this? And the mom's like, yep. Every night when I say bedtime, that's the look she gives me. I'm like, cool. So just 12 and under, kids just being themselves, trying to capture them as they are. Just pretty amazing little kids. And seeing what they write about, they're answering the question, who are you, in their own words. I just throw some siblings. That's one of my favorites. You can't just beat the Elmo pose. Two sisters. How old is your brother? This is tall. And sometimes they're free. Sometimes it's cut loose, which is kind of cool. And the reason I do it is because, you know, my wife and I just had our baby five and a half weeks ago, so this is obviously on my mind. So that's what that project's working on. Phil, if you could set up the DVD, I'm going to introduce a short DVD for you guys. You guys all having fun?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. I'm going to show you a short DVD, because I have ADHD, so my work's always really quick. And I'll do a little slam for you. If you could hook up track 4. And this DVD is about how I look very much like a lot of ethically ambiguous Disney characters. Okay, whenever you're ready.
Wednesday, 8:17 p.m.
Hi, sweetheart. Please say happy birthday. I'll talk to you soon, folks. Bye.
This is my mom. She likes her kids, planting flowers, yoga, Pilates, Chinese food, and her son being a doctor. Her other son. This is how she leaves messages for me on the phone.
Hello, sweetheart. Happy birthday. See you. Okay. How come you don't answer your cell phone? Okay. That wish you a happy birthday, too. Hold on. My sick phone does me so much, I forgot it. Jack, pick up the phone and wish Lawrence happy birthday. Oh, okay. I did not know. I forgot. Okay, bye, Jack.
This is my dad. He likes his kids, poetry, white wine, football on TV, boxing on TV, cable TV, satellite TV. This is how he leaves messages for me on the phone.
Hi, genius. Thanks for fixing the Epson printer. I don't know how you did it, but that did, though. He tried a lot of things. Works fine. I can also send emails. You might see us tomorrow morning, well, but yeah, and you're going to Spencer's thing, so. I think Spencer starts at 1 o'clock. So yeah, let's come by tomorrow morning. Let us know when you come in or what. We'll leave the door open or something, or set a trap. We'll have to see you, son.
You are coming when, sir? Oh.
And this is me. I like Disney movies. I grew up pretty much like any other kid, wondering who I was, how I fit in, where I was going. I was also pretty unsure about the whole concept of girls. But sometimes my older sister would have her high school girlfriends over to swim, and she'd let me hang out by the pool with them. I like that. I like that. They would lay out by the pool on the wet concrete and work on their tans. I already had a tan, but I hung out anyway. Did I mention I really liked that a lot? I also really liked Disneyland. I grew up on the People Mover and the submarine that never really went underwater and that great train with the dinosaurs and the lava and all the fake cactus and the stuffed bobcats. But it was the movies that really got me. And the Disney movies got me for one special reason. See, every time one of those movies had some ethnically ambiguous character in it, that character always kind of looked like me. Now, you got to realize this is the 70s, okay? Not a real haven for media images of Asian men. And I was one kid that watched a lot of TV. The few images that were out there all kind of fit into the same kind of roles. I mean, if they were even Asian at all. And forget about multiracial. That wasn't even on the radar screen. Well, maybe there was one semi-multiracial character.
All right, you mutinous, disloyal, computerized half-breed. We'll see about you deserting my ship.
The term half-breed is somewhat applicable, but computerized is inaccurate.
But there wasn't much else. When I looked in the mirror, when I looked on TV, nothing really matched up. I grew up pretty much like any other kid, wondering who I was, how I fit in, where I was going. I thought my parents and my family were just like everyone else, that everyone got made fun of for what they looked like, or what they ate for lunch, or how they celebrated holidays. On one side, Chinese relatives called me and my father Guailo, white devil. Going to school, I was a chink who knew kung fu and could ace all the math tests. In my Hoppa world, no one played like me, no one thought like me, and certainly no one looked like me. When I looked in the mirror, when I looked on TV, when I looked around, nothing really matched up. Until Disney came to the rescue.
Tonight's top 10 list. Top 10 ethnically ambiguous Disney characters that look like me. Number 10, Mulan. Number 9, Li Shang, the love interest guy from Mulan. Number 8, Lilo's sister. Number 7, the bad bald guy from Lilo and Stitch. Number 6, any of the Native American characters from Pocahontas, including Pocahontas herself. Number 5, Aladdin. Number 4, Mowgli. Number 3, the random shirtless local love interest guy in Lilo and Stitch. Number 2, the Indian guy from Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron. And the number 1 ethnically ambiguous Disney character that looks like me, Lilo.
I think I'm most like Lilo.
Are you going to put yourself in the movie?
No, we're just,
dub it out or something?
I think Disney owes me some royalty rights.
Ah, what? I don't either. I
like what are you up to? What he's up to?
He's not trying to get Disney to give him money.
What's he's up to?
No, he does think that a lot of the Disney characters look like Kit.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, what am I up to, Mom?
No, up to no good.
It started out as a joke between my girlfriend and me. I mean, for Christmas, she got me the Lilo and Stitch DVD with all the new deleted scenes. For my birthday, she gave me Aladdin. We joke about it. And sometimes she calls me Mowgli.
But as I go through old boxes of photographs, trying to find images for this film, I end up looking at this little kid. And I remember what it was like to go to school, to go to family functions, to go outside. And I want to take that little kid and show him a bigger world. Or at least take him out to the pool. I was checking out Merriam-Webster, and there's this concept called heterosis. It means the marked vigor or capacity for growth often exhibited by crossbred animals or plants. Crossbred. I guess that's what it's all about.
To get Disney to pay for this.
It's foolish.
Do you think this will be a good tape?
I have no idea.
But they've got lots of money.
Huh?
But they've got lots of money.
Lots of books for some money?
They've got lots of money.
I don't know, it looks like one of my cousins.
No.
We got 5 minutes, so I'm gonna do a slam piece for you guys if it's cool. Okay, this is a piece about, thanks Phil for running this thing, I appreciate that. And for you guys for coming out. This is a piece called My World. It's about having the courage to speak up for what you believe in. In this day and age of haves and have-nots, blues and reds, legals and illegals, I just want a world we no longer recognize celebrities by their first names. No more Paris, no more Lindsay, no more Donald, no Tom. But then I want a world where my students care more about learning than getting an A, where people care more about who I am than what I am. I want a Brady Bunch world. But in this episode, Mr. Brady gets to come out of the closet. In this episode, Alice makes a living wage. In this episode, Marsha, like hot Marsha, has the crush on me. I want a world where a person's words still mean something, and popular movies no longer insult my intelligence, and jet skis just disappear. I want a world where the Beatles never broke up, but the Stones finally did. I want a world where we no longer judge a person by the color of their skin, the length of their hair, the shape of their body, or the money in their pocketbook. A world where Ricky Martin can stay Ricky Morales. Erykah Badu can stay Erica Wright. John Stewart can stay John Leibovitz. Dean Cain can stay Dean Tanaka. And Martin Sheen can stay Ramon Estevez. A world where commercial appeal no longer requires making your name sound more or less ethnic. I want a world where meter maids only get to give tickets to other meter maids. And ice cream is good for you. And cigarettes were never invented. And teachers get paid. And these queues were comfortable. And gasoline? I want a world where gasoline costs more than bottled water. Because it doesn't. I want a world where every politician who voted for this war has their own child on the front lines. And people stop asking me what I think of Virginia Tech just because both the killers happen to be Asian. And everybody gets to get married if they want to. I want a world where faculty meetings include mandatory wrestling. Because I would just dominate. And Walmart goes bankrupt. And Dick Cheney's nose grows like Pinocchio. And gas stations sell carrots. And Bruce Lee's still alive. And losing your hair is suddenly cool. I want a world where Denny's serves the black folks first. I want a world where Taco Bell, man, they got to use an asterisk when they call themselves Mexican food. I want a world where Sarah Palin gets her own reality show. Because it'd be like a train wreck, man. You'd have to watch. And speaking of train wrecks, how about we stop them before they start? In my world, if you want to have a kid, if you want to be a parent, man, you've got to pass a test. I want a world where developers have to live where they build. And McDonald's no longer has to have playlands attached to it because kids have access to something called a park. And the words plan community mean things like family planning, not track homes and giant SUVs. And the word illegal means waterboarding, not some immigrant working his butt off to feed his family. And I start for the Lakers, and Kobe actually passes. And televangelists get taxed. And Muslim no longer means terrorist. And patriot no longer means redneck. And tenured professors, those of us who have forgotten this dream of higher education, now no longer seem to give a shit about teaching or students. Man, we just get fired. I want a world where poachers get shot by the animals. And waitresses, they tip you, depending how nice you are, to them. And spammers get hives, and schools get funding, and I never lose my car keys. A world where Ashley Simpson, Celine Dion, and John Mayer are stuck on some deserted island singing the same song to each other over and over and over and over until there is only one. I want a world where Tiger Woods is no longer the first black golfer to win the Masters, but is just a damn good golfer. But after all this, I will settle for something else. I will settle for Tiger saying something political. Just once. I mean, come on, man. You got to care about something. You got to care about something more than not offending your sponsors. I mean, you too, J-Lo. You too, Keanu. And yes, I'm putting a responsibility on you. A responsibility I don't have put on Paris or Lindsay or Donald or Tom. A responsibility that some people take seriously. People like Harry Belafonte, the Dixie Chicks, Steve Nash, Heinz Ward, even if it means costing them some sales or a potential endorsement. Because in my world, speaking out is not what you get to do with fame. Speaking out is what you have to do with fame. NBA players visiting hospitals saying stay in school is not enough. There was a time when becoming an internationally recognized athlete carried with it a sense of social responsibility. What has happened to the likes of Jackie Robinson, Wilma Rudolph, Arthur Ashe, Billie Jean King, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali, John Carlos, Tommy Smith, Kathy Freeman? What has happened to our willingness to speak out without fear? And more importantly, what has happened to our willingness to speak out in spite of fear? Because in this world, here in this room, man, we got to check ourselves. We got to judge ourselves. We got to judge ourselves not only on what we believe in, but what we are willing to do with our lives to pursue that belief. Let me say that one more time. We have to judge ourselves not only on what we believe in, but what we are willing to do with our lives to pursue that belief. Because in this day and age of haves and have-nots, blues and reds, legals and illegals, it is more important to react like Kanye West than Mike Myers. More important to speak out than to sit politely. And more important to live with the consequences of doing so than to stand idly by and watch this beautiful garden go to seed. I brought you stickers, so I'll be over there. There's three books. The novel, just so you know, is rated R, so don't buy it for like junior high kids. Just there's adult situations. Okay, so I'll be over there if you guys want to hang out. Thanks.